Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast,
Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod.
It is a Scary Stories podcast hosted by two idiots who are chummy little chatters. And that's kind of what you should expect from this. Okay.
Yes, please. I took a look at our reviews on audible.com. I wasn't aware that that was something that you were able to do.
Oh, no.
And boy, people really are upset. We are a comedy podcast, everybody. I think they're upset that a podcast with the word scary in it is not screaming and trying to terrorize the audience.
Oh, yeah. I do think maybe we're just categorized wrong.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah, if maybe you found your way here and you are a masked monster looking to stab some teens, we are next door at the 4-H camp.
We are. We're learning about rabbits.
Yes, and what sort of grains to feed pigs for them to gain weight in a healthy way?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're all trading who gets to put down the grain for the pigs because there's not enough pigs for the amount of kids.
But Anna, we are in the midst of our summer series where every Friday we watch a movie by director Stephen Sommers, and we like to call it
Stephen Sommers Summer.
Oh, God, no.
Summer of Stephen. Or Summer Stephen Sommers.
Summer. By this point, we hope you've figured out that we don't know what to call it yet, but it basically we're watching Stephen Sommers movies.
This is like in a rom-com where the leads are about to kiss finally, and the woman is just listing all the horrible things about her, and he's like, but that's how I know you're the one, and then they kiss. Like, we're just listing all the horrible. We're being the worst version of ourselves to know that if you stick around, you really do love us, which is not how podcast marketing works.
I know. But I feel like also maybe if you're the sort of person who likes to pick up free furniture, that maybe you're like, well, if they dislike themselves so much, there must be something below the surface that's interesting.
Right. Right. Yeah. We are. Let us be your wet couch.
I can be your wet couch, baby.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, look, Andrew, here's the truth. Let's give them the goods. Okay.
We're telling you this because we trust you, everybody.
We're telling you this because we trust you. Here's the deal. We, lost our recording of, the first time we talked about Scorpion King, Paul, friends of the pod, Paul F. Tompkins and Janie Haddad Tompkins. We'll be recording with them in 2 weeks.
Correct.
We'll be watching a different Stephen Sommers movie that rocks.
You'll be so happy.
You'll be so happy. But thank God we had to push with them because we lost our recording, which is either my fault or Jason's fault. And we're both just sort of being sweet to each other because it was just our anniversary. And yes. No one's blaming anyone.
Happy anniversary, Anna and Jason.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been 84 years. But yeah, so anyway, but you know what? That first time around, that was just the one time.
Yes.
And this time is the real time.
And I feel really, Anna and I, neither of us were heartbroken that the last recording didn't work out. Not because we felt bad about that recording, but because we just feel more qualified to talk about the 2002 classic film Scorpion King with you today.
It's called Scorpion King. Scorpion King.
Now, you know? I do. So, Anna, this movie is the spinoff of the runaway sequel, The Mummy Returns.
Yes. It was sort of like a regular Walking Pace sequel. It made about made about a quarter of The Mummy did. But it was The Rock. His first major screen acting role was as the Scorpion King in Mummy Returns. Mm-hmm. And we saw an interview with Dwayne Johnson, which is what we call him now. Okay, be nice.
Everybody be nice. Dwayne's trying something out. Yes.
He doesn't want to be beholden to Vince McMahon, which let's start there. An executive producer on this movie, which executive producer, for those not in the industry, this can mean a lot of things. This can mean you are very involved. You're hiring a lot of people. You're working on the source material. It can also be an absolute vanity title.
Yes.
And Andrew, I'll ask you again. Do you know what work Vince McMahon did on this movie?
What work did he do, Anna?
He owns the name The Rock. And that is how Dwayne Johnson was credited for this movie. And I do believe it's part of why, in addition to like wanting to seem more serious and more of an actor, why he moved away from being called The Rock.
Yes.
And went to Dwayne Johnson. We had the middle period where it was Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We all got very comfortable saying that. Mm-hmm. We're now asking you to be comfortable saying just Dwayne Johnson, DJ to his friends.
Imagine if someone owned your nickname.
Stupid bitch. Oh my god. Yeah, just insane that like your boss from your weird job where you got hit in the head a lot just got to make money from anything you did. Wild. And
the kind of twist with this movie, well, one of the many twists, is that so Stephen Sommers did not direct it, but he did write the story and was one of the screenwriters of this.
Yes,
movie.
There's a bunch of other people credited with story and screenwriting, which I think is good. I think Stephen Sommers is wonderful. I do think he needs a little bit of a leash. He needs to be held in a little bit. He dreams too big. Okay.
We all need that friend who makes us question some of our decisions.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
And it is interesting when you have these summer blockbusters, things happen really quickly and they happen like crazy people are in charge of these decisions.
Yes.
And the thing is, like, they're making decisions predicting what the American public will like.
Right.
And the American public is crazy. So you have a lot of crazy people who yeah. are often good at their job because they're right, because the crazy things that they're saying. makes sense. And I do use the word quite crazy. Okay. I think no doctor would call you crazy and it's okay. Well, I'm not going to stop saying crazy. I'm sorry.
I will also say that, we watched this interview, this old interview with Dwayne Johnson, like doing press for the yes. movie. And he talks about when he was shooting The Mummy, really like his one scene where he is actually playing himself and not a CGI scorpion monster. He was incredibly sick. It was like 115 degrees, but he had to have like blankets covering him. He was getting sick to his stomach. You know, it was a nightmare. And he thought, oh God, like what is this? How is this going to be my like big debut? And then, as he is so sick, his reps come to him and they're like, hey, they've been watching the dailies and they want to make a movie about your character. And very sweetly, Dwayne asked, what are dailies?
So sweet. That's like his Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman with the necklace box moment. Like he's so new.
And imagine shooting one scene in a movie and just from shooting it, the movie hasn't even come out yet. They're already planning another whole movie around your little character.
This happens to me every time I act. they make a major summer blockbuster based on old bitch with a clipboard.
right. My character, HR employee number one in the movie Keeping Up with the Joneses, classically became a very famous spinoff.
Just a couple of bummers. but yeah, like it really, and dailies are just like whatever they shot that day that they'll watch. This is right. This is a podcast about entering the industry.
And welcome.
But yeah, I love that story, Andrew, and it goes into why this movie works, which is mostly because of Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
It is so clear when you see a star, like it must be so shocking to see someone who's not a star yet and just discover them.
Yes. And he is like, so the Scorpion King, like rough notes on it. So this is much more of a sword and sandals hero epic than it is a like horror thriller movie.
Yes.
There are thrilling elements of it, but basically Dwayne Johnson plays Matthias, who is an Acadian warrior. That's Acadian with two Ks, everybody.
Not three.
Not three and no C. And so we're sort of in this world. I think the Scorpion King is like loosely based on a historical figure. I don't think there was a second of historical research done on this movie.
Certainly not. This is 2002. That's kind of pre-Wikipedia being commonly used.
Exactly.
But yeah, there's a King Scorpion who existed. I don't think he was a scorpion, but...
And so he basically is trying to avenge his brother's death at the hand of a megalomaniacal villain king named, do you remember the name?
Yeah, his name, interestingly enough, was Memnon.
Memnon. I know, that sounds like, I don't know, something about that sounds like my Siri is malfunctioning.
It's, this is like when you, are singing happy birthday to someone in a restaurant. You don't know who it is. It's like a table over. And you're like, happy birthday, dear.
Memnon.
Yeah. That's his name. And that's what his character is based on. Also important to say, this movie acts as a prequel to The Mummy Returns. This takes place thousands of years before The Mummy, I believe.
Yeah.
Or at least thousand of years. I think like 3000 BC is roughly what we're dealing with here. And we're dealing with warring tribes. It's like a war-based economy, which
welcome. Yeah.
Welcome. Once
again. Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
And everybody fighting. This guy Memnon is an asshole. And he's a double crosser. And... Matthias's brother is killed by this jerk, and he declares vengeance. And so this movie, his desire is to get vengeance on this jerk who's making life really hard for everyone.
Right.
And he's played by a man named Stephen Brand, who has a very queer haircut in this movie.
Boy, oh boy, does he. This haircut is every cool queer person I know has had this haircut.
It's a shave, sort of braided mohawk style, long ponytail. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a hair hat.
It's a hairt.
Also in this movie, Anna, at playing the sorceress, is the really wonderful Kelly Hu.
Kelly Hu, wonderful actress. This is her first big breakout role. She won this role over a lot of other people by winning the... just the director was like, this girl's talented, and the casting directors weren't quite giving her the chance. Mm. It's really cool. It's two non-white leads, basically.
Which that's the thing about this movie. This shouldn't be remarkable, but unfortunately for 2002, it was very remarkable to have such a diverse cast and have that not be the like marketing ploy. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It really doesn't come up that much, which like I think partially makes sense. Like, just in context, like we can't give them too terribly much credit because like she is pretty heavily exoticized and is nude. This is another sort of the Stephen Sommers theme. Underwear is illegal for women. Cannot have it. We got to see hip bones and nipples at all times. Otherwise, jail.
I mean, in fairness, Anna, as you pointed out, I would also say none of the men were wearing underwear either because Anna posited that the CGI budget in this movie was almost entirely spent on editing out balls.
Yep. There are a lot of men. They're not. I do think manspreading is just because a lot of men aren't used to like gripping their thighs together.
Yeah.
And you can tell these stunt guys go down and they just go like pointing their perineum at lens, like heels on either side of the camera.
And I would guess that none of these men were tucking. You know what I mean? I think this is sort of a low and lazy crowd.
Mother did not tuck her scene. Oh my God. She is kissing America with her beehole.
I just want to say also, because Kelly, who I think I most knew of from X-Men 2, where she unfortunately kind of gets sidelined as Lady Deathstrike, but she's such a charming actor, and also a Miss Hawaii, a semi-professional poker player, and Anna in 2007, who was a driver in the Toyota Pro Celebrity Race, a national fundraising program supporting children's hospitals through the United States. She's a race driver in Toyota.
This woman, I have to ask a question. She's too cool to be straight, right?
I think honorarily we're saying that she is
culturally queer.
She is queering the system. I guess that's the best way to put it.
The poker playing. So, and her character, let's talk a little bit about her character, the game with her character is the only thing I remembered from watching this in Jamie Scotto's living room in eighth grade. It is that she is a sorceress who is helping Memnon to take over the world. Mm-hmm. But the caveat is she is only an oracle if she remains a virgin, which so he keeps his hands off her. And he's got this whole villain arc of like, one day you will be mine, which is like very Jafar, very common. We see this a lot. But I think it's nice. I do think I found it hard to not relate to the idea of like a man can only listen to advice from a woman if he's not having sex with her. Because the minute I have sex with you, I can't listen to you anymore.
A very good point, Anna. Wow.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've known a lot of relationships like this, you know?
She's only smart until it go in, and then she dumb.
She has not changed, but the way she is perceived has changed.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know about that. But to this film's credit, like, it is a pretty, I know this word has lost all meaning, but it is a very diverse cast.
Yes.
Especially for the time, and even for now, I think, like.
I know. I mean, you've got Michael Clark Duncan in there.
Who's in there as, like, is it a villain? Is it a friend? Like, it's sort of, he's just kind of pissed. It's unclear whose side he's on, but he's fantastic.
They really allow him to exist in a gray area, which I appreciate. And he's coming hot off the Green Mile in this movie, and he's like, give me a paycheck, I'm truly just going to play at this part so that I can wave a sword around, and you get all of my lines are one-liners, these are all gif-able. Like, really, he is living his best life.
Yeah, his suitcase usually just has his DOP kit in it. He's not unpacking. At this point in time, he's traveling a lot. Although, we'll get to it at the end. But let's talk more about the story of it and the characters.
Yes.
So, let's talk about the look of it. I feel like we've summarized it pretty closely. The look of it, which we both noticed, it's 2002. It looks very PacSun. Like, it doesn't look like The Mummy or The Mummy Returns, really. It looks like kind of shitty, like, it looks like a Lucky brand bag from 2002, where it's just, like, patches of leather in different colors kind of sewn together uglily.
It's very Survivor adjacent. Yes! I just realized this.
I do think Survivor had an impact on the fashion, because there's a couple of guards who have, like, palm fronds as clothing.
It's very everything. All the sets kind of look like Survivor challenges where it's like they're going to have to climb up this thing. Like, all the set pieces really kind of fit into that nicely. Yeah.
And this movie, we've talked about how queer the movies are. This one is, I would say, one of the straightest movies.
Boy, this might be the straightest movie I've seen in a while. I mean, the opening scene, you know, like in all the other Mummy movies, it always opens with like a voiceover talking about history. And in this one, the opening scene involves like impaling a Viking's groin on a chandelier made of antlers. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is playing to a different audience here.
Yeah, this is not quite, quote unquote, for me. Like, and it seemed like they intended originally for the historical like map voiceover shot sequence to be the beginning of the movie. But this movie seems like it's working so hard to be like, we're not school.
Right. Oh my gosh, Anna, you're right. If we've talked about how the first two Mummy movies really do cater to a mom audience, this movie is catering to adult sons of moms audience.
Yes. Yeah. This is very much for like angry teens. It also, this is the first movie. I mean, I'm not entirely sure when it wrapped by, but it's the first post 9/11 movie of the Stephen Sommers oeuvre.
Whoa.
It's like very aggressive. Very dude bro-ish, which isn't bad. We're not saying it's bad. It's just interesting that you can kind of feel the narrowing of who the audience is.
Yeah.
Which makes sense that, like, you've got The Rock, so they're trying to please what they perceive to be wrestling fans, even though, like, wrestling fans by and large are very like, this is something I had to learn recently. It's not just men. It is like pretty equally distributed, men, women, like all backgrounds. It's impressive.
It's pretty remarkable. That's something that I'm just learning now too. But now that I think back, like, all the kids I knew who were into wrestling, it was always surprising. And it was always people from drastically different walks of life.
Right. But kind of the loudest and most visible fans were like straight white goods. That's guy dudes.
Yeah.
Goods. And it just, it's a little bit of a bummer to feel like they're focusing on sort of, you know, those dudes.
It also is occurring to me, Anna, the post 9/11 of this, the emphasis is really taken away from the sort of Middle Easternness of the Mummy movies.
Yes.
This exists kind of nowhere except for the main city that this whole movie takes place in.
Gamora. It takes place in Gamora. And just think about that. And they didn't really do that much with it. Like, I think the first scene we see is like a guy and a girl making out at a party, which is like the least depraved. That's like the most common sight.
It is. I mean, I will say with this movie, Anna and I were thoroughly delighted by it. You know,
yeah,
like, I really was not expecting to be charmed by this movie. I really was. There are a couple moments that really do feel like they were studio notes or maybe executive producer notes that were like, there were like three different scenes where there are like a harem of women who are talking directly to the camera and being like, ooh, I want to get to know you, like in a way that felt very strange and out of place for this movie.
Yeah. Like, it also, this comes back to like The Rock with on-screen horniness, that it's a little bit oil and water.
Yes.
Like, it's clear that they're thinking of women viewers with his constantly shirtless body, which is, you know, I'm clapping. Yeah, a great job. Good job drinking chicken. But aside, like, whenever he's in like a horny scene with horny girls, which like is pretty much most of the movies he's been in, it feels odd. Like, it just, not that he, I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm gonna get in trouble.
I get what you're saying. I think The Rock is, or Dwayne Johnson is, so wholesome, and I think we are endeared to see him in situations where where like people are trying to objectify him, and he's just like, I'm truly just here to avenge my brother. You know?
Yeah, it's like, you're right, every other scene is a bunch of girls being like, have sex with me or I'll kill myself, and he's like, ladies, I'm sorry, I have a meeting.
I mean, we also have to talk, Anna, before we get into the kind of meat of our normal discussion around these movies, we got to talk about the camel.
This camel, Hannah the camel, played by two different camels, an incredible actor.
I've never seen a camel seize the camera so totally.
The amount of like single close-up shots on this camel is at least 20.
Even when the camel's in a medium or wide shot, the camel is almost without exception looking straight into the camera like, really? Like, it is astounding to me.
It feels like the camel is a road comic who just knows how to work a crowd. Like, yeah, she's a little hacky, but like ultimately at the end of the day, the audience is laughing. So what's the problem?
Anna, I mean, I know this is a strange question, but I feel like we have to ask it because we've asked it of all Stephen Sommers movies. Who is the monster in this movie?
The monster is not the Scorpion King.
Wow.
The monster in this movie, it's sort of, you know what it reminded me of was A Knight's Tale, where like it's Anna, just this like scheming king. It. And A Knight's Tale was it 2001?
Yeah, it was like 2000.
I love that movie. I could do a full series about it.
That is right.
Where it's like, it's just a jerk guy. Yeah, 2001. It's like not really history, but yeah, there's not a ton of supernatural in this movie at all. Right. Which I wonder,
just the sorceress.
Yeah, like she, yeah, that she can like tap into stuff. She has visions. That's the one supernatural thing.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, the Memnon's a monster. What's the gear? We've got a lot of gear. We've got a lot of curved swords. Mm-hmm. We've got the gift of sight.
Yes.
Being psychic.
Important.
Important. We've got a bow and arrow. They were really hoping for the Scorpion King to be a bow and arrow guy.
And we just don't think of the Scorpion King as being a bow and arrow guy, but it is true. In this movie, that's what he does.
I don't know why. I guess they were like, what's the most like a scorpion's tail?
I think because Legolas really kind of twinkified archery.
They needed to butch it up again.
Yeah.
They needed somebody with thick thighs to fight. So I just lost my way in the middle of it because I accidentally said thighs and then I just stopped talking.
I mean, the thing is like there was a lot of emphasis also put on how hard it is to pull the bow of a bow and arrow. And it must be incredibly difficult. I really admire the use of practical effects in this movie, Anna.
Yes, this is the main takeaway that we both had. There's not a lot of VFX that feels obvious. Like you can tell that they've sweetened up certain things, like add a little bit more fire to different things. And obviously some of the like deaths and stuff, maybe a little bit of VFX, but like it is by and large all practical, which means they did it for real and shot it, which we do has to be a reaction to how universally panned the CGI was in The Mummy Returns,
right.
Which was a result of, I just found this out, they finished The Rock's, his scenes and when he comes back as a Scorpion King at the end, 8 days before the movie came out. So they are just like rushing. It is not the VFX artist's fault. This entirely because of budget and time constraints.
Wow.
You get what you pay for.
That's a really important distinction to make. Wow.
Yes. And like you can tell that this was like a little bit, it feels, I don't know enough about movies to use the phrase director jail, but it feels a little bit like Stephen Sommers was in director jail because of that.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of real stunts. The Rock, what I do love about The Rock that we found out from a movie is that he did use his stunt double, which I like.
I
don't like it when actors do their own stunts. It makes me nervous.
Let stunt performers do what they're best at.
You know what would ruin everyone's lives? If you broke your little foot and couldn't do your job. So don't do that.
And the stunts are really incredible. And the amount of stuff Memnon, like with flaming swords and things. Like,
yeah.
There are things that are truly stunning to look at because of their practicality.
Yeah, like they add a little bit more flames to it. And like they VFX the flames like appearing for the first time on the sword. But when he's moving them around, you can tell that is real flame.
Yeah. Oh,
fire
yeah.
is one of those things to me always kind of looks fake. But this, it looks real because it is real. It's very cool. That I will say, like balancing out sort of the bro-y look of it, the effects being real, it just makes a difference.
And there were a couple times, you know, when like this is what makes stunt performing so impressive. There were a couple moments in the movie where Anna and I looked at each other in true like Midwest Dust Bowl faces, like, how did they do that? And one of them was, there's a scene where people are like running along a bridge while like 40 flaming arrows are shot into the sky, like coming towards them.
Real ones.
We truly were like, how was not everyone killed in this?
It is so insane.
Yes.
And for anyone who's like feeling interested in our like rudimentary discussion of stunts and stuff, just look up Jason has shown me YouTube videos of the people who make the stunts for the Fast and the Furious movies talking about how they do it, because almost all of their effects are practical, which is like even things in the movie where you're like, obviously that is fake. They did for real. I won't spoil anything because the movie just came out, but a lot of it's fucking real.
I do want to give credit to Chuck Russell, who directed the movie, who also directed a bunch of like 80s films that really left an impact on me, including A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, which is really great. The 1988 remake of The Blob, which terrified me, Anna.
Who was in that?
No one really. That's really rude to say. I don't mean that.
Really rude. No, you're correct. Kevin Dillon.
Kevin Dillon, Shawnee Smith.
Del Close.
Oh, wow. Yes, he plays the reverend. He plays the unhinged reverend.
Father of improv.
He's like the villain of the movie. Wow.
Good.
And then he was he executive produced Collateral. Got it.
He's the director of The Mask.
No, he is?
Yes.
You're right. And Eraser.
Wild.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good lineup.
I feel that he was a good director for Dwayne Johnson. I think that he shot him properly. We've talked a lot about making use of how beautiful the men are. And a lot of male directors are like, yeah. Okay, whatever. Let's get to the girl boob. Like he shoots the men beautifully because the men are beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. He also included a scene. This is from IMDb trivia. Very fun. In one scene, Dwayne Johnson, lying on his back, springs to his feet. Director Chuck Russell wanted to include a physical feat, which only Johnson could perform. Russell said he had never seen a 6'3" man do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool.
Dwayne Johnson is a huge, strong man. The concept of doing that flip up like that, it really is impressive to see.
It's amazing. And like, you have somebody who is a professional wrestler, like do things that are crowd pleasers that he knows how to do. That also, at the same time, as somebody that he's a newer actor, do include something that puts him in his element and makes him feel good. I think that's great.
I mean, some of the more horror elements in this movie are the presence of killer ants, which do eat a man a la the scarabs.
Yes, there's the one of the monsters is fire ants.
Right.
And which they're again, a little bit big.
The CGI is better than the CGI of the scarabs in the first two Mummy movies. So they are learning, they are improving.
Yeah, every time there is CGI in a movie, they invent new algorithms to make it look better. And then for the next movie, they'll use whatever innovations they used from the movie before and build on that. So like every year that goes by, every project that goes by, they are using what's from before. Like Pixar, there's stuff you can find about like they use the asset from Inside Out to animate Joe Gardner's fingers moving. It's very interesting.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm talking about, but we talked about like – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, please.
That like when we were talking about The Mummy Returns and how every movie kind of looked the same from this era, it's like they just, because of Lord of the Rings and Titanic to a certain extent, they figured out how to animate very large crowds.
Yeah. Wow.
So you see that in Attack of the Clones and Mummy Returns. Obviously, there's like a billion armies. but this movie, I think, was much more restrained. So it's, like they had the fire ants, but there's a time and a place.
This movie also has a set piece involving snakes, and it made me appreciate how they held off on snakes in the first two Mummy movies. You pointed out because they didn't want to maybe draw the comparison to the Indiana Jones movies, which I think is true, but I do think snakes are used well in this movie.
Snakes are used well. Yes. There's a connection to sort of the feminine, the mystique, the, you know, traitorousness.
Right.
There's the great scene with Kelly Hu reaching into vases to find a snake.
She uses a snake like a sword to fight a man with a sword. The snake immediately gets its head cut off, but I do admire the ingenuity.
It happens on the edit, so you don't see the head flying off, which I liked.
Thank you very much.
Also, I should say, a very bloodless movie.
Yes, we did discuss that.
The kills happen kind of off camera, or you cut to a dead body.
Now, I know we've talked a lot about the straight elements of this film, Anna, but I do think it's time to talk about what is gay about this movie.
Wow. There's not a lot. This is the shortest list, but I would say they're quite gay. Okay. The line, "In my bed is where I lose my vision." That's gay.
Very gay.
Or in your bed?
In your bed, I would lose my
is where I lose my vision.
Yes.
That's gay. Wearing a chainmail bikini and a giant jacket.
Gay.
Gamora as a set piece. That's gay. Dwayne Johnson about the head of a character. He'll be all the prettier without it. Gay. Selling birds in the city of Gamora. That's gay. Andrew, you said that. Here's another Andrew one. Spitting a jewel into a man's hand. It's gay.
classically.
The Job Inventor, gay. Who's Bernard Hill, who's in this movie, King Theoden, and from Titanic.
So great.
That I assume that's what his website says. Yes. BernardHill.com, King Theoden, and from Titanic. Memnon visits a harem rarely. That's
a whole thing.
There's a line where the harem girls are like, he visits so rarely.
It's like, okay, Memnon.
And Andrew, there's a scene where The Rock and Kelly Hu burst out of a wishing well, and a little boy had just thrown in a rock and then sees them and says, I got my wish. And Andrew said, kid, you're not fooling anybody. You wish for The Rock.
He was. I hate to break it to you, kid. You were, whether or not you knew it. But that was very, that was coded very much in the film.
Whether or not you know yourself very well and you know yourself to be straight, you're gay. Sucking gold out of your friend's mouth to save their life. That's gay. Reminding your boss that the sorceress should be present at these meetings. That's gay. There was a scene. There was like one soldier who, like, maybe he's the biggest villain of the whole movie, that he keeps being like, hi, sorry, Memnon. The sorceress isn't here and she should be here. Do we want to get her in? He's constantly looping somebody in passive aggressively. But he's right. And he is gay. Several close-up shots on a camel. Gay. Dancing while no one pays attention. That's gay. The line, soldiers will fall prey to idle palace gossip. That's gay. And waking up in the desert with no underwear on. Gay.
Very gay. Anna, I have a few contributions to this.
Please.
So there's one that is not camel related, and then the rest are all just camel related.
Okay.
The one non-camel related one is Michael Clark Duncan's line, if I'm not a king, then why do I see you on your knees before me?
Gay.
Okay. And then all camel things, sitting down with a heavy sigh while all your friends are fighting. Gay.
Okay.
sitting down in the sand while your friend is next to you dying in the sand. Gay. Okay. And then finally, dropping your friend off at a party and waiting outside. And then when the castle explodes, you think, this just isn't worth it. And so you walk away slowly. Gay.
Gay. You're right.
Camels, canonically, if you can store water in your back, you're gay.
Also, I'll say it, the people's eyebrow, it's queer.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Come for me, please.
That is true.
It was the only thing he did that was a reference to his character.
That's true.
But.
Yeah, cocking an eyebrow, come on.
Cocking an eyebrow, that's gay.
Anna, what did Ebert say about this movie? Did he like it?
Oh, Ebert loved this movie. He gave it 3 stars, or he did the thing where he loved it but is like chastising it.
Oh, wow.
Let's see, 3 stars. That's how much he gave the original Mummy.
That is wild. I mean, that makes sense, though. This is we do recommend this movie, everybody.
We do. It's on HBO Max. Give it a look.
Yeah.
Let's see. The film stars The Rock, famous as a WWF wrestling star. Vince McMahon takes a producer's credit. And on the basis of this movie, he can definitely star in movies like this. The story, it's so funny to hear someone be like, I think The Rock is good and he will be in movies. Okay. The story takes place so long ago in prehistory that The Rock was a hero and had not yet turned into the villain of The Mummy Returns, and we can clearly see his face and muscular physique, an improvement over the earlier film in which most of his scenes consisted of his face being attached to a scorpion so large it looked like a giant lobster.
Yeah.
How gigantic was the lobster? It would take a buffalo to play the turf. Okay, Ebert, you're being mean.
Okay, Robert Ebert.
We love that. Robert Ebert.
Let's cut it
short. What are you doing, Robert? Okay, he's talking about the plot. The scene where they vow to kill the Scorpion King is equally impressive as Matthias and Toad's, as long as one of us still breathes, the sorcerer will die. See if you can spot the logical loophole.
Wow.
I can't quite. More plot. Let's see. Who, a beautiful woman who looks as if she is trying to remember the good things her agent told her would happen if she took this role. Mean.
That's mean. Because she's really doing an earnest job in this movie, and I appreciate her.
She did a fine, like, what else are you supposed to do? She did a good job. She's a sorceress. What do you want?
Yes.
Mean. Also, this is 2002 where you could still be like, that stupid whore about anything.
Yeah, that was just that could be the headline on Parade magazine. Yeah.
Mean. Yes, exactly. She has equally clever, long, flowing hair, which cascades down over her breasts instead of up and over her head, even when she is descending a waterfall. Shut up. Okay, this is the last paragraph. Did I enjoy this movie? Yeah, I did. Although not quite enough to recommend it, because it tries too hard to be hyper and not hard enough to be clever. It is what it is, though, and pretty good at it. Those who dislike this movie are unlikely to attend it. Does anybody go to see The Rock in The Scorpion King by accident? For its target audience looking for a few laughs, martial arts, and stuff that blows up real good, it will be exactly what they expected. It has high energy, the action never stops, the dialogue knows it's funny, and The Rock has the authority to play the role and the fortitude to keep a straight face. I expect him to become a durable action star.
Wow. I mean, Ebert knew.
He knew.
He knew. And I do think there's so many things that I admire about this movie, too. Its directness. It's not trying to reinvent the wheel. It ends with, like, zero twist. It also ends without any connective tissue between this and The Mummy Returns. It really is just
Just shows him he's a great person who's very honest and, like, reasonable. And The Mummy Returns picks up with him as, like, an absolutely family-less jerk.
Despot.
Who's just fighting in the desert and screaming and eating scorpions, and he sells his soul to the devil, basically.
It might be that the thing about this movie is, like, we are seeing – I mean, it could be that the sorceress is the key to his connection to the people.
I know. I guess, like, there are sequels to this, and maybe they cover that.
And maybe that
was part of it, is that they were like, let's make it so far away that they have to give us more movies. I will say, if his breakup with the sorceress was part of it, that makes sense to me, because guys who are this massive, who are also nice, when they break up with their girlfriends, they become really mean.
That's a very good, you know, there's something sort of comparable to this movie and Cruella, which is like very charming and fun. And I will say, like, I had the like dope reaction at the end where I was like, well, how come she hates dogs? Which, like, I'm sure
it doesn't get you there.
They're going to answer in another movie. It's just that she loves dogs so much in the movie. She then has the Dalmatians and she's like, they're my Dalmatians and I like them and I'm going to give them to my friends.
Well,
I think Ebert is right. I think this is a perfect, like, Saturday afternoon. Like, I just want to go somewhere glad in my brain for a while and eat chips.
Yes, somewhere glad and eat chips. That's a t-shirt. Yeah, it seems like a good movie to make out during, because you're not really missing anything.
Oh, that's a really good point. And then, like, when you need occasional breaks, there is an explosion for you to, like, look. Or there's an opportunity to see a camel and to be like, aw, and, like, have something else to talk about for a while.
It's a good movie for camels to make out during.
No, and that's there nice. Is a, that demographic is dwindling, and I think that's a shame.
It really is. Think about it.
Anna, I really am so delighted to talk about this movie with you a second time. It was just as much fun.
I am too. Well, Andrew, let's end on a little bit of a segment similar to what we normally do. Did anything scorpion happen to you this week?
Okay. Did anything scorpion happen to me this week? I will say the most scorpion thing that happened to me this week was watching another interview with The Rock with you, where he's talking to, like, an 85-year-old interviewer from God only knows where. And the man is like, you and I have a lot in common. And Dwayne Johnson is like, really? And he's like, I've been bit by scorpions several times. And Dwayne just doesn't know what to do with this information. And then the man, like, pulls a pin from his lapel, gets super close to Dwayne Johnson's face and is like, see? And it's like, what are you showing him that would indicate you've been stung by scorpions several times?
And then he reaches out and shakes his hand. And you can, I've had that conversation with so many barflies.
Yes. Like, this is me at every wedding. Yeah.
Hey, you, listen to me. I'm like you.
I've been stung by scorpion. That's like me going up to the hottest person in the world and being like, I own a swimsuit too.
Yep.
How about you, Anna? Anything scorpion happened to you this week?
Anything scorpion happened to me this week? I saw a lizard. That's sort of scorpion.
You saw a lizard?
It's lizard season, you guys, and my dog likes lizards. And I saw one on a walk. She doesn't have great eyesight, so I always point out the lizards to her. And whenever I point them out to her, she reacts less than if she saw them on her own, because I think she feels a little bit like, yeah, okay, fine. I could have seen that.
That's like any one of my, either of my parents mentioning something about theater to me circa 2003.
Yeah, okay, I like lizards, but not that lizard. Well, that's good.
That's very Scorpion, Anna.
That's very, thank you. That's it.
Everybody, we hope you have a delightful long weekend this 4th of July if you are of American extraction. We will not have any new episodes next week.
Or hot dog extraction.
That is very important. Equally important.
Yeah.
There will be no new episodes next week, but the following week we're going to make up for it. We got two real humdingers coming at you. Again, Paul F. Tompkins and Janie Haddad Tompkins will be joining us to talk about Van Helsing, which, good Lord, everybody, you're going
to
love it.
I have a lot to say.
We all do. It's going to be a blast. But yeah, please keep sending us your urban legisode campfire tales. We love getting them.
At scarystorypod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @scarystory_pod.
And one more thing you could do, please.
Get out.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod is executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Produced by Tracy Soren. Original theme music by Chris Ryan. Cover art by Bats Langley. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @foreverdogteam to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.